Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The outdoors has been a place of learning since the beginning of time here on the Carolina Outdoors. We're going to celebrate a little bit about that education in the outdoors, and we're going to find out how we're using the outdoors to learn recreationally, but also academically. Your host here on the Carolina Outdoors, Bill Bartee and Wes Lawson. Wes, this is right up your alley because you've got quite a resume in the world of education.
Yeah, but this is going to be a little bit different than what I did, since I went so often on a more traditional path. But this concept, which is not a new one, of gap years, is one that has really been embraced by more and more families over the last few years, especially post-pandemic. So it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about that and doing it in a way that is more nature-based, more holistic, and very unique.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because many of the schools that maybe our listeners would know, Knowles, the National Outdoor Leadership School, Outward Bound, both of those 60-plus years in existence, kind of brought this type of curriculum on board. I would not have called it mainstream until recently, and of course, the growth of homeschooling over the past 30 years or so, the growth and change in education with technology, even for outdoor learning, how it's come into effect. And then guess what? As you mentioned, the pandemic happened, and this thing called a gap year became more mainstream, if that's the right word. And we're going to learn a little bit about that by having a 20-year-plus-year educator, Hub Knott, who is the co-founder and executive director of the Living Earth School in Virginia, join in on the Carolina Outdoors so we can find out about how we learn in nature and then about a gap year program that's going on with Hub. So, Hub, welcome to the Carolina Outdoors.
Thank you. I appreciate it a lot. Thanks for having me on. Beautiful day up here in Virginia.
Well, let's talk about that, because there are a lot of kids in classrooms who are indoors learning a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about, first off, the mainstreaming of experiential education, and talk to us about the positives that a beautiful day can bring to someone who is being educated.
Right. Perfect. I think I grew up going to school where we sat in the classroom all day long. And for me, being dyslexic, growing up and struggling with that sitting environment, I was more hands-on learning that I think for certain kids it just doesn't work great for. And I think they're losing a lot of opportunities of learning there. So, and a lot of schools are doing a lot more. We're doing some here in Charlottesville where we're working with the kids and taking them outdoors and doing projects with them or challenges. And they just get so much more engaged, and when they go back to actually sit in the classroom, their whole nervous system is calmer, and they just are a lot more focused, is what the teachers report back. So I think there's something about using their hands and engaging with something that isn't necessarily as linear as we're used to learning, and I think that is really healthy for their brains, just to kind of stretch and think about possibilities. So,
You know, the modern school classroom was not necessarily designed with the student learning at the forefront. It was designed to allow one teacher to oversee a large number of pupils and to convey as much information as quickly as possible in a quiet space. Right. And that doesn't always work for most of us, because like you, as a young person growing up who didn't know that everybody else didn't have words that would change places on a page, it could be very frustrating to try to sit there and simply listen or try harder. But what Living Earth School does is going even beyond that. How do you see your place kind of in the market, but also how do your students find out, how do they sort of self-select and find out about Living Earth School and move forward?
That's a good question. So we have like a one of staff to six kids ratio, and part of that is because one of the, like, we're really big on mentoring, and mentoring means like showing up for the individuals. And I think there's a lot of kids lost in the system of school where the teachers are overwhelmed, overworked, and a lot of kids fall through the cracks. And for us, it's like we actually staff come together and discuss the different kids and be like, try to figure out like, how are they learning? Where are they struggling? And how do we work with that? I think there's a lot of, you know, and then the kids keep coming back because they're like, wow, you guys are, you treat us respectfully, and you're the only people that see that, hey, I might be into really into butterflies or into something else. And we will ask questions and help them engage with it on a deeper level and ask questions that they never asked. So, honestly, a lot of people, I mean, some kids find out about us in schools and different things, but I imagine a lot of parents, it's a lot of parents sharing word of mouth. We don't do a lot of marketing because our programs tend to fill pretty quickly. So it's word of mouth of parents. And some kids are like, hey, I'm a computer kid. I don't really do nature. And I'm like, great. Well, let's go over here first and do some, we're going to get them engaged in things. By the end of the week, they're like, that was the best week of my life. Just being out the side and away from screens and just engaging and swimming. And I kind of treat it as like, you know, let's not bring all the world problems into this, because I think the kids get bombarded with so many problems in our culture and world and the environment that I want this to be a sanctuary for them to just kind of be children of the earth, so to speak, and just kind of have fun and just experience it and have challenges of like making a fire or something like that, and then figuring out why it didn't work and then trying it again and being like stoked when they get it. So,
well, and understanding the science behind why that works, or rather than having to read in a old textbook about butterflies going out there and finding the habitat, yeah. Why do they come to certain plants, how they migrate, yeah. So far in some cases. And of course, in Virginia, that would be the monarch, was it the tiger swallowtail? Isn't that the state butterfly? Look at that.
Yeah, good pull.
So, yeah, I think it's always interesting when people kind of almost roll their eyes at some of these programs, yeah. And they realize this is actually a really fantastic way to learn. But as gap years have kind of come back again, you've got this interesting new opportunity for folks. Can you talk about the Deeper Roots program and what brought that to be?
Yeah, I mean, our overarching philosophy is build curiosity and connection with these different things, and the information about butterflies, so to speak, will come in time when the kid's into it. But if you try to throw them information, no kid's like, wow, that's a really neat fact. I now like butterflies.
Right.
You know, it's usually like they get that connection, and then it's amazing. Like, they don't even know where they got all their knowledge from all of a sudden. But it just floods in, and I think a lot of education gets it backwards. So the gap year, when I was 18, 19, graduating high school, I had no idea what I wanted. Most kids I knew went to college, and I grew up in Baltimore, and they were on some track, whether it's to take over the family company or something like that, and I just, like, I don't want any of this right now. I don't know what I wanted. So I did a gap year and did a program and out in the woods, and it just reset my whole thing, and I learned skills and my confidence went up. And for me, and I've seen that with other kids I've worked with, it's just like, take a pause, be mindful of what you're doing, have some cool experiences and share it with others, as well as, you know, tend to my, like, figure out what I hub want. And so we're here aiming to, like, provide that experience for these kids, because I think it's a tough time of life, not knowing what you wanted or what you want. And that I see a lot. I work with a lot of adults, and I see, like, 30, 40-year-olds being like, I have no idea how I got here, but I don't love it.
Yeah, and just to let our listeners know, a gap year is that break time. You're taking a break between high school graduation. You don't know if you want to be an engineer, a teacher, whatever, and you take a break. A lot of people go get jobs. A lot of people do other things temporarily for that 1 year.
Right.
They work at the ski resort. But this, Deeper Roots, is an opportunity to stay engaged academically for that nine-month period.
Correct.
And then you may, quote unquote, find yourself or find what you want to do or have more direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a danger in that time, too, that people could just drift and not really dig in. And I wouldn't be where I am today without mentors that stepped into my life and stuck by my side sometimes for 10 or 15 years, just kind of helping ask questions, never told me what to do. They just would, you know, they knew I knew in my own natural intelligence that I knew what to do next, but I didn't know how to ask the right question maybe. So that's why we're really into the mentoring model of just, you know, hold space for these kids or young adults. And, you know, some of our hopes is have them come out with what values do they really believe in? Because I think a lot of people don't know what they really value. And I think life's really hard to navigate well without regret if you don't know your values and how to act on them. And just having those, and just group experiences where they learn to work together, as well as individual challenges where they learn about themselves. And some kids might be like, you know, I realize I'm really lazy. And it's like, well, sweet. That's actually a killer observation. What's the way that we, you know, and help them try to navigate a different approach so they don't have that same story that's not serving them well play in their head. And I think that's what mentors can do, as well as teach a lot about nature. And we do, you know, we do some lectures. We tell a lot of stories because stories are, I think, the next best thing to from experience itself, and help them digest what they're learning. Because I think without digestion, what they're learning, it doesn't always land well.
And you're doing all of this great learning and teaching and mentoring in the Blue Ridge Mountains, in the southern end of the Shenandoah Valley, in a very, you know, ecologically and biologically diverse part of the country. What are some of the kind of hallmark courses or events of the Deeper Roots Gap Year program that really kind of set this apart?
Right. So, I mean, there's a natural history component where we will dive in and learn the plants and how to learn plants, and we'll do animal tracking and, you know, study weather and kind of all the different pieces of natural history, get to know the birds and how, like, even birds can, like, indicate that there's a predator nearby because of the way they signal about a predator, because their lives depend on it. So they communicate those alarms and teach them how to read those kind of rippling effects on the landscape. But we also mix in, like, earth skills or survival skills. Like, say if I just took away everything you had and handed you a knife, or take away the knife, and you went out just as you are, what would you do in this environment? What can you eat? Where can you make rope? What woods can you use for making a fire by rubbing sticks together? And in that, I find, like, sure, my hope is, I doubt many people will go, and I say, I've done a bunch of survival trips, but I know some of them won't, but there's something about the simplicity that brings back, like, wow, I feel like I needed all these. I needed three cars. I wanted this big job. I wanted all these different things that complicate life sometimes. And I think the earth skills really helps them, like, hone in to, like, what do I really need? And also a lot of creativity. They're like, oh, if I did this, if I use leaves for a survival shelter, I can also use leaves in my stuff and in my clothing to be warm if I really needed to. And just, it teaches them really creative thinking and how to interact with the environment. And nature's a pretty honest teacher. It doesn't sit there and be like, I don't like that kid, I'm going to pick on him or anything like that. It's just kind of, it just does its thing, and we can adapt to it and learn a ton about ourselves and the environment by interacting and using the. I think it's really hard to learn a lot about plants if you're not utilizing it somehow. So I think that's where it sticks, and they really build that relationship and connection. So that's one of our hopes, is that they build this deep relationship. And my experience is that it's the students that have left us that have gone on to be environmental lawyers or become outdoor educators or ecotherapists or different roles like that. So we hope to expose everyone to, like, what are the options if you want nature to be a part of your life? Where can you make a livable wage doing what you love?
That's Hub Knott, Living Earth School's co-founder and director, talking about Deeper Roots that's coming up. You can learn more at livingearthva.org. about Deeper Roots immersion and the gap year.
Yeah.
Hub, thank you so much for jumping in with us here on the Carolina Outdoors. We're ready to take our gap year.
Great. Well, come on up. It's pretty nice up here right now. So,
well, thanks for being on. We'll have to get you back on, too, to do it again and learn more every time. With Wes Lawson and Bill Barty, this is the Carolina Outdoors. Fly fishing is in the news across the Carolinas. The weather's gotten warmer. The fly fishing film tour has been announced. It is March 22nd at the Visualite Theater. Wes, it's a good time to talk to someone who's running the Carolina Fly Fishing Club.
That is, you know, and that's one of our favorite groups here in the area, especially for fly fishing in our region. So why don't we stop and get Bill Jewett to jump right on in?
That's right. The voice of Wes Lawson there, Bill Barty, as we bring on Bill Jewett, president of the Carolina Fly Fishing Club. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Bill and Wes.
I should say the new president. You have recently been crowned the president, and you're off and running with the club. But, Bill, for people who don't know about the Carolina Fly Fishing Club, what is its purpose, its mission? Why is it in existence?
Well, in order to answer that question, I got to give you a quick background on the club. There were two gentlemen about 15 years ago, Jack Cummings, along with Dave Duffy. They both lived in Spruce Pine, North Carolina. They came up with an idea to start a local all-inclusive fly fishing club that promoted all fish in all waters for all people from the mountains to the sea. They had gotten tired of the old school idea of fly fishing where it was the old man's club that they could. Nobody knew where they were going. Nobody shared anything, knowledge or otherwise. And they wanted to open it up to everybody. Men, women, children, teenagers, you name it. If you wanted to learn to fly fish, Carolina Fly Fishing Club was going to be there to help you get that way, including fly tying.
Well, and the Carolina Fly Fishing Club has worked closely with the community, whether it be with conservation in regards to Trout Unlimited, whether it be with veterans with Project Healing Waters, whether it be with ladies coming into the sport, with women on the fly. The Carolina Fly Fishing Club has helped those groups and partnered with those groups, shared membership along the way. How have you done that? Is it through events? Is it through outings? Is it through education? How do you keep people fly fishing and staying interested?
Well, we use several different mediums for that. We have our website, which has been longstanding. We now do a lot on social media, both Facebook and we're getting into Instagram. But our biggest way to pass on this information is our monthly meeting, which is the second Wednesday of every month, held at Bass Pro Shops up on the second floor. And a lot of our interests, a lot of our forthcoming to interact with the community, with conservation, with other types of groups, children and that, come from our speakers who come once a month. For example, we have Jeb Brown coming this month to speak to us from Davidson Outdoors, and he is a longtime guide for them. And he's going to talk about the trout situation and the water clarity and levels and everything that's going on right now.
Well, and I did pull up the website, too, carolinaflyfishingclub.org. And one of the things that I noticed, and in fact, this weekend you have one, if people are listening live via the airwaves of WBT Radio to the Carolina Outdoors with Wes Lawson and Bill Barty, are the day trips. And you're going up towards, the Ararat River this weekend. But then throughout March, April, May, anywhere from Jacob Fork at South Mountain to Stone Mountain, straight up 77 to the Mitchell River in April as well. Who goes on those trips? And if we're a newcomer to fly fishing, is this a day trip that we should register for and attend with the Carolina Fly Fishing Club?
Oh, yes, definitely. We have a lot of seasoned fly fishermen who are very much into mentoring new people. I'm actually fairly new to fly fishing. I've only been doing it a little over a year. I've fished my whole life every other format, but fly fishing to me, I still consider myself a newcomer. And the knowledge that I've gotten from these people that are members is more than I could ever pay for in a school. It's highly valued, highly sought after. And if you're interested in fly fishing, by all means, come out and see us at the film festival. And, you know, the film tour that's going to be taking place in March. We'll have a booth there along with Women on the Fly, and Project Healing Waters will be there. And especially if you're a veteran, come out and see Project Healing Waters. It's one of the greatest programs I've ever experienced, and I'm a recipient as well as starting to be a volunteer for them.
So, Bill, I'm fascinated by your statement earlier that you are the newly crowned president of the Carolina Fly Fishing Club, and you have been fly fishing for a year. What got you to transition over or add to your quiver of skills, not just conventional fishing, but fly fishing? What brought that change about for you?
Actually, Project Healing Waters was where it all started. As I said, I'm a recipient of Project Healing Waters, 8-year Navy vet, and I was introduced to Project Healing Waters through the VA in Salisbury. My counselor actually recommended him. And when I got there, the funny thing is I went to the first Carolina Fly Fishing Club meeting thinking it was Project Healing Waters. And I actually went to 3 meetings before I realized it was totally separate from each other. But I had learned so much in Carolina fly fishing that I hungered for more. And that's how I ended up going back to every one of the meetings.
Well, it sounds like the mission of those first two founders is all well and good 18 years later. Just by that story, and I did like your invitation to the March 22nd event of the Fly Fishing Film Tour, where Bill Jewett and other members of the Carolina Fly Fishing Club will be on hand, and you can shake his hand and also sign up for the club. Again, I'm going to give that out, Bill, the website, carolinaflyfishingclub.org. We got to take a break at the bottom of the hour, Bill, but thank you for jumping on with us here on the Carolina Outdoors. It is the year of the trail in North Carolina, and we're going for a hike here on the Carolina Outdoors. Welcome, everyone. Bill Bartee and Wes Lawson of the Carolina Outdoors. We're going to go on a hike that features 4 current or future greenways and trails, 2 county parks. We're going to cross 3 creeks and a bunch of tributaries.
So I'm tired already.
I know it.
I'm tired and I'm sore.
First question is, how long is this hike? No, we're going to delve into this, about this hike. It's the Urban Hike 2023, the location right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're going to bring on one of the founders of this hike to talk about who it's for and how it started. Join Wes and I and both welcoming Drew Thrasher to the Carolina Outdoors. Drew, welcome aboard.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Wes. Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Man, we are glad that you're here. We got something going on March 12th, 2023. That's a Sunday. It's called the Urban Hike. And, Drew, you are one of the founders. It's been going on for 5 years. How did this thing start?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So about 5 years ago, a couple buddies of mine in our neighborhood, David Heron, Johnny Hemingway, just sat around and we started talking about, you know, we need to get our kids outside and off their screens and, you know, go check out this city that we all live in. And so started as really a grassroots movement and trying to get people together and get outside, and kind of has grown from there. But just really all about getting outdoors, getting some exercise and getting to know our neighbors a little bit better, spending some quality time with neighbors, you know, away from the screens and away from the craziness of our lives. And so it just kind of started from there, and you know, everyone loved it so much, it quickly became an annual tradition, and excited to keep it going.
Well, Wes and I have got a few questions about all of this, so we're going to delve in deep. But first off, it's been going on 5 years. A lot has happened in 5 years. How many attend the hike, and as far as how it has progressed, the outdoors over the past 2.5 years has been one of the safest places to be. But talk to us about attendance and who and how many started, and then we'll just keep on talking about it.
Sure. Yeah, it has been a bit of a roller coaster over the last 5 years. Started out pretty small as kind of more of a neighborhood event. Maybe had 15, 20 people or so. And then they invite their friends in future years, and the circles expand, and people move out of the neighborhood and move other places, but they still come in for the day. And so, it's kind of evolved over the years as the circles have overlapped and expanded. And, we invite anybody to come out. It's the great thing about the trail and being outdoors is that you can have as many people as you want, right? There's no capacity limits. And, so it's open to anybody, and we just try to spread it word of mouth. And, every year we have some different circles of folks showing up, and it's always a great chance to get to meet new folks and learn about folks that maybe you knew somewhat, but you really get to know somebody spending a few hours on the trail together.
And this isn't just a group of people going for a long walk. There's points of interest. There's some sort of local history, places that have been lost to progress that maybe we don't know about. For the hike this year, the 7.7-mile, 4-hour or so walk with friends, what are those points of interest? What are we gonna find out about the Greater South Park area?
That's right. It's intentionally that we call it the urban hike and not the urban walk. All right, we want it to feel like you're getting out there and getting closer to nature and getting kind of away from the hustle and bustle of the city as much as we can. And so, we try to maximize our time off of the roads. Sometimes we have to get on roads to connect, but try to maximize our time off of the streets and really see some of those sites that you don't normally see when you're zooming around in your car, with the crazy traffic we have here in town. But for instance, Bill mentioned the creeks and greenways that certainly will feature prominently. This year, really excited to highlight a brand new backlot trail that the city of Charlotte just completed that actually connects South Park over to the Cross Charlotte Trail via Park Road Park. So that's been something that's been in the works for a few years, and so very excited that they're basically cutting the ribbon on that thing any minute now. And so we're excited to check that out. Beyond that, lots of local history around the area that we drive by every day and may not realize. So all the folks that lived in the South Park area, Greater South Park area before we were here, the Black family and all their dairy farms, will certainly touch on some of that. And then something I didn't really know much about until just recently was the old Soapbox Derby track that was over off of Tavola Road that was there for a good long while. And so the interesting history behind that that we'll touch on. But really it's about just kind of getting off the road, getting into some of those areas that you don't normally get exposure to in our busy daily lives.
We've got Drew Thrasher on the Carolina Outdoors with Wes Lawson and Bill Barty, and we're talking about the Urban Hike, Sunday, March 12th. It's a 1 o'clock start time. It'll last, as Wes said, 3 or 4 hours until the late afternoon of March 12th. And, Drew, you've picked this Sunday. I guess it's the same Sunday-ish each year. How did that day get picked?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, a lot of us children that are, high school, middle school age, and, back when we first started this, there's a lot of moving parts with youth sports going on, and, finding a full Sunday afternoon was challenging with everything going on. And so this date always sits right between the end of basketball season and the start of baseball season, and seemed to give us the best shot at getting the most number of people out there on a Sunday. And so it falls on Selection Sunday, which is, when the March Madness teams get picked, and so very minimal chance of any organized sports conflicts during that Sunday afternoon. And so it seems to work well also from a weather standpoint. It's not too hot, not too cold, kind of brings in the welcoming of spring. Although today, with our temperatures today, you might say spring started today. But usually middle of March is a great time weather-wise as well.
So along those lines, 7.7 miles, 4 hours, what should participants bring or wear for the urban hike?
Great question. Main thing is wearing something you don't mind getting dirty. You know, we're not going to be crawling through the mud or anything crazy, but, you know, there could be some muddy spots. And so just make sure you don't wear your most expensive clothes. Definitely want to bring some water if you can. You know, I'm a guy who loves hiking with a hiking stick. So if you're like me, you know, you definitely want to bring that along. But, you know, not overly technical hiking, I would say. You know, we're always within the city limits here, right? We always have cell phone service. You know, we're always a quick step away from local businesses. So nothing too crazy to worry about. But I would say the main thing is just something you wouldn't mind getting dirty.
If only there were a store nearby that sold that kind of stuff. I wonder where that would be, Bill Barty of Jesse Brown's Outdoors and jessebrowns.com.
And that's also where you can go get more information about the Urban Hike 2023, because we're going to post it all up there, such as, but right now we're going to ask the founder, too, of The Start Place. Drew, all of this is going to happen. I've still got some more questions for you. 7.7 miles can be intimidating to many who may be listening to this. Do you have a bit of an out if somebody does not want to hike the entire 7.7 miles?
Uber.
Absolutely. Great question. And I'll say, I'll be the first to say my kids have taken that opportunity for an out a few times in prior hikes. But yeah, the route we can certainly make available, and it's close to many thoroughfares throughout the greater South Park area this time, so there's plenty of opportunities to jump on or off the trail at different points. You know, I'd say the great thing about the urban hike with a big group, it really helps, you know, helps you power through those miles when you've got a big group and, you know, you get to talking and before you know it, a few miles pass by, you know, much different than being on the trail by yourself. So, but no, certainly plenty of opportunities to jump on and off. We can make sure, you know, we have the full route available for folks that want to go and check it out online.
Yeah, and I think our listeners should be challenged a little bit, because 7.7 miles sounds like a lot, but when you allow for 4 hours and you're stopping to talk about points of interest, historical places, seeing things that you don't see from an automobile, that's really not that long of a hike. So we do encourage people to try to power through and show up, but of course we don't want to exclude anybody. And with that being said, Drew, where is the start point at 1 o'clock on March 12th?
Yeah, great question. So we're going to rendezvous in the parking lot of the Fair Meadows Swim and Racquet Club, right in the heart of South Park. So that's at 2800 Eastford Road, just a 9-iron away from Jesse Brown's there. But there's a parking lot right there at the pool. And they're going to keep that parking lot open for us all day. So we're going to rendezvous right there. Again, Fair Meadows Swim and Racquet Club, 2800 Eastburn Road. And we will head out from there promptly at 1 o'clock to hit the trail. So don't be late. If you're late, you can find us and catch up with us on the route. And, I encourage anybody to come out and give it a shot. I've got 12 metal screws and 2 metal plates in my left foot. And if I can make it, a lot of other people can too. So don't be scared. Come on out. We've got people from all age groups and all levels of ability.
I think he just threw the gauntlet down, Bill. We'll get a radio flyer wagon to pull you in.
Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'm not going to be denied. I'm going to knock this 7.7 miles out because I asked about where the start point is. Drew, give us the award for finishing the hike. Where are we going to finish this thing?
Great question. It is not exactly a full loop, but it's close to a loop route. But we'll end up at one of my favorite local establishments, the Legion Brewery in South Park, which sits right there kind of behind Piedmont Town Center. And it happens to sit right on the routing of the new South Park loop that you may have heard about. So good partners there at Legion Brewery South Park. And so from there, it's just a short jaunt back to the parking lot there if you parked your car there, or, you know, easy to get ride shares from folks there in the South Park area. That is the plan, to finish up there and raise a glass and toast the miles that we put behind us.
Drew, you, David Hare, and Jonathan Hemingway planned this thing, and I in the intro we talked about the Year of the Trail in North Carolina, and you and the other two, you are encouragers, and you're encouragers for other people, other places to do the same and maybe plan their own urban hike. What words of advice would you give those people if they were going to do what you, David, and Jonathan have done?
Absolutely. Anybody can do it, right? We're certainly not experts. It just takes a little bit of time. But, you know, I'd say you know, pick a date that makes sense, right? A good weather day is key, right? Trying to do that in a hot day in the middle of August would be a challenge. So, you know, pick a day where you probably are going to have good weather. It makes all the difference. You know, and encourage your neighbors and friends to expand the circle and, you know, invite their friends. And it's always great to kind of bring in folks and increase the chances that you're going to meet additional folks. But, you know, make sure you make it fun as well, right? I mean, sprinkle in the history and, you know, maybe some technical sections of the hike, you know, just to kind of keep things interesting for folks. And keep in mind your audience. If you have folks from different ages, you want to make sure that you have things that will engage your full audience. When our kids were younger, you know, we definitely had to play some mind games with them, and, you know, we would release some of the routes, you know, a little bit at a time, so they wouldn't know the full route until they were in the middle of it. Before they know it, they'd be 7 miles down. So, you know, think about your audience, and you can sprinkle in some fun. But, you know, again, you don't have to have any money to do this thing. It's there's lots of great trails out there in all the neighborhoods and across the city and the county, and, you know, encourage anyone that is interested in trying to plan a hike in their neck of the woods. And lots of great information online as well, whether it be the Cross Charlotte Trail, the Carolina Thread Trail, all the greenways. There's lots of great info online, so encourage you to go check it out.
Yeah, Drew, you missed last week's show. We learned and spoke about what a farcium was. You may have used that one on your children during these hikes when they were younger. Do you happen to know what a farcium is?
A farcium. Have not heard that one before. Is that a Clover, South Carolina thing? I'm more of an Eastern North Carolina guy.
It is not. It is straight from Charlotte, the Long household, to encourage their young children on hikes. When their kids would say, how much further? They would say, we've got about six more farciums to go. And a farcium was as far as you could see, and times seven or whatever the unit is that they wanted. So they maybe we can use that on the urban hike for the younger hikers, or for me. Just tell me it's two more farciums and we'll be there. You can hear that on Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors podcast. Of course, we also blast up and down the Eastern Seaboard early on a Saturday morning via the airways of WBT, and we're going to be taking pictures and participating. So if you'd like more information, you can find it at jessebrowns.com under events, but also follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Jesse Brown CLT, because we're going to have the start, all of the information that we can for you to find, and also follow us because we'll be taking pictures. Jesse Brown's Outdoors will be along on the hike, and we will be, for those who did not make it out to sign up on March 12th at 1 o'clock. Again, it is free. You just need to come, but we'll have all those photos logged on those social media sites so you can play along as well. Drew, what did we miss out on? Did we leave anything out of the information?
I think we hit the high points for sure. You know, we'll make sure we get all the information out to you, Bill, Wes, and you can get it out, you know, to your listeners as needed. But, you know, again, just really excited. It's kind of the highlight of the year for me, and looking forward to seeing some of these new trails out there and meeting some new folks.
Urban Hike 2023, 7.7 miles, approximately 4 hours, four current future greenways trails, two county parks, and crossing three creeks and a whole bunch of tributaries. Who's invited? You're invited. Sunday, March 12th, 1 p.m. start time. Drew Thasher, thank you for founding this, and thank you for joining us here on the Carolina Outdoors.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Wes.
Off he goes, and off we go. But we're going to come back the other side and wrap up this edition of the Carolina Outdoors. Bill Bartee, Wes Lawson, the Carolina Outdoors is in session. Wes, we have a whole bunch to talk about, and this is the final segment.
I know. We got to stretch out from all that hiking and fly fishing and outdoor education. That was crazy.
That's right. If you just missed the previous segments, we covered it all. We started off with a little bit of education.
Mm-hmm.
And we went from talking about the mainstreaming, I guess, of experiential is what I call it, alternative education, which means getting outdoors or doing it not just classroom style.
Yeah.
And then also the mainstreaming of something called a gap year, taking a break between high school graduation, getting that GED or whatever, the gap between that and whatever you're going to do for the rest of your life, whether it be going to school or getting a job or going in the military or somewhere, some mix of all of those. And then Bill Jewett jumped on the program, Carolina Fly Fishing Club, and shared a little bit about that club start and how it sounds like a club of encouragement, helping people get started and being in, staying in the sport of fly fishing. Of course, Dave Bergman does guided wading trips that he teaches people and improves people in the sport of fly fishing. But a club, I guess that accountability and camaraderie helps be glue of you staying in the sport.
Well, and Dave has spoken several times to the Carolina Fly Fishing Club at their monthly meetings. So that was good. And then, of course, Drew Thrasher talking about the Urban Hike 2023 here in the greater South Park area coming up in March. Was it March 12th?
It is March 12th, and it's on the calendar of events at jessebrowns.com, and it is sitting right beside something that's taking place on March 2nd. Thursday, 1:30, the first Thursday of each month, we're bringing the Carolina Outdoors to Facebook Live. We're inviting you to join in, ask questions, make comments, see how the Carolina Outdoors happens, whether you're listening to us via the airwaves of WBT or highlights of the Carolina Outdoors via podcast. We invite you, again, this is appointment radio, if you will, March 2nd, 1:30 p.m. with Wes Lawson and Bill Barty on Facebook Live. The March 12 event is for everybody. Let's be clear. This is the Urban Hike, and Jesse Browns and the Urban Hike Committee want you to participate. So join in at 1 o'clock on that March 12 days. Be prepared for the hike. Wear comfortable footwear. Bring a little bit of water to have on your hand, although there are points along the way that you can access. But who wants to stop and go into a store when you can have it in your backpack or on your belt or carry it in your hand?
Goodness knows you're not going to drink the water out of the stream. Also, Bill, they leave at 1 o'clock. So 1 o'clock is the start time. Get there early so you can be on time for the hoofing it around the 7.7-mile hike.
Hey, and then lastly, circling back to the Carolina Fly Fishing Club, they are one of the groups that's going to be on hand, along with Rocky River Trout Unlimited, Project Healing Waters, Women on the Fly, and the Coastal Conservation Association of North Carolina, all on hand at the March 22nd Fly Fishing Film Tour, named the F3T. We're going to have live music starting at 5 p.m. at the Visualite Theater. 7 p.m. the films start. It's going to be a fly fishing party, pretty much. And you're invited to get tickets. Again, you can get those over at jessebrowns.com. Just type in fly film tickets, and up it'll pop on the website. Buy those things. They're $18 each, but it does include the live music and the films and the party of fly fishing aficionados that will be surrounding us all.
And you may get to meet Chris Franks and hear some funny stories from Chris Franks. So it's always worth the price of admission. You know, Bill, a lot of stuff has been going on over there at Jesse Brown's Outdoors. Some updates in the store, some updates to the website. So make sure you check it out. It's always fun when our listeners come in and say hello and let us know that they are, that you are, in fact, listeners. Also, let us know what you'd like to hear more of. You can always just email one of us. It's either of our names, Bill or Wes, at jessebrown.com. It's always good to hear from you.
Hey, congratulations to you. We spoke about it last week, but the QC at 3, hey, camping, whether it be backpacking, whether it be family, what to take and what not to take.
Yeah.
That was fantastic television.
Yeah. Cheryl Brayboy met me and my son Ben over at Park Road Parks. We set up a couple of different campsites, so we had a few segments on QC Morning and QC at 3. What not to do, what to do, and the big thing is just go out there and do it. And if you are backpacking, obviously carry less.
Well, congratulations on that thing. What's QC stand for? The Queen City. That's Charlotte, North Carolina. That's where the home base of Jesse Brown's Outdoors is, the brick and mortar located in the Sharon Corner Shopping Center. A whole bunch of things on sale, up to 50% and more off. So check that out at jessebrowns.com. But Charlotte is also the home base of Studio D, where the Carolina Outdoors program emits. We're glad that you tuned in. Thanks for Wes Lawson, TJ Boggs. Thanks to our guests, Bill Jewett, Hub Knot, and Drew Thrasher all for joining in. Remember, to make the Carolina Outdoors look a little bit better than you found it, and pick up your trash. Trash, 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 trash.